So welcome one and all. And today we will be reading the third section of this beautiful pastime. As I explained to the devotees who were here yesterday and the day before, we will not use the usual Bhagavatam verse presentation, but rather I will read it and you can read it with me aloud, and then we'll go straight into the subject matter of this pastime. Nan vadha mai kurvanti. Nan vadha mahi kurvanti kushala swarta darshinaha kushala swarta darshinaha ahaituki avyakta hitam ki avyahitam bhaktim atma priye yata. And the translation, certainly expert personalities who can see their own true interest, render unmotivated and uninterrupted devotional service, directly unto me, for I am the most dear to the soul. So this particular verse, wonderful verse, this is Krishna speaking. And he's speaking to some very, very special ladies. These ladies were simultaneously extremely fortunate, and they thought they were the most unfortunate. So let us hear this story. So the boys, the cowherd boys, were with Krishna in the forest. They were playing, having so much fun, laughing, joking, swinging in the trees, swirling around flowers, throwing fruit at each other, lying on the ground, standing up, pretending to be frogs, jumping here and there, splashing in the water. You can't imagine, they had every day so much fun. And what do? We have these material bodies we carry around. We have to wash them in the morning. We have to feed them three times a day. We have to go and earn money so that we can keep maintaining them. We have problems with our mind. We carry this stuff around with us like we carry a backpack of stuff with us all the time, constantly. We go to sleep at night. Sometimes we can't sleep. Sometimes we're disturbed. Sometimes we have bad dreams. Sometimes we get sick and then we die. And there you have it. So we're really fortunate. We have a really good deal. But we're so covered by this ignorance, that we think that this is life. This is a very important point. We think this is life. This is the real thing. And if you get on a tram down here and you go right into the city, you'll see where people are pulsating with this kind of passion and they're calling it life. And when we are fortunate, when we're touching Krishna consciousness, we look at that and we say, that is not life. That is not life. That is almost like death. Because it is devoid of any love, of anything. Just like in the modern age, people say, I love, so trivially, so easily, I love this new dress I got, I love this taste of ice cream, I love going to the movies, I love you, he loves me, we love this, love, 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 and this word has no meaning, it doesn't coin any value, because it's used to mean so many trivial things. It becomes a trivial word. Because words have two values. You see, if you use any word in its proper way, it will link you with the Supreme. And if you use the same word in its Maya-covered way, it will pull you away from the Supreme. Every word has this dual potency. So the word love becomes a very overused, commercial, cheap type of a thing. So when we hear that somebody loves somebody, we hear, okay, that's nice, they love them. But we don't really have any way of knowing what it means. What does it mean that you love them? And sometimes you'll hear an example of somebody's love, where they sacrifice their life for another person. And that moves us. Because along with the word love, there's an action of great unselfishness. So then we put the two, yeah, that's kind of, that must be love. But we're so unfortunate in this material world, there's nothing lovable here. We're not lovable, other people aren't lovable, and things aren't lovable. How can you love things? They have no life in them. They don't reciprocate with you. How can you love them? You can be attached to them, no doubt, but you can't love them. And people, well, they're little. They're about the same size we are. And if you go up in an aeroplane, as we were coming into Melbourne, I took my camera and put it against the window and I watched these little things about this big that were sort of slowly creeping their way down these brown pathways. They turned into vehicles. And inside those vehicles, there were people. But how small are they? I just go up a certain distance in the air and I just see nothing. So people are so tiny. And so the love you can give to another person, it has limitations. And the love they can give you has limitations because they also love so many other things. And mostly they love themselves. This is human nature. So therefore we're in a loveless world. And we make the best use of it that we can. But it's difficult to really, when you hear about people loving, at least I may be only revealing to you my own lovelessness. You may all be very different, but when I hear about two people and they love each other, it doesn't do any chemistry for me. I go, okay, fair enough. And I take it into my head space, but it doesn't make my heart start to beat very quickly. And even when I hear that somebody loves Krishna, I take it in the same system. Oh, that's nice. So this morning I was reading, preparing for this class, about the love of these ladies for Krishna. And I was trying to think, oh, now how can I actually enter into love? And I remembered an incident that happened to me quite a few years ago when I was in Jagannath Puri. And it was so profound. You see, if you want, you can see Krishna teaching you things everywhere. In the streets of Melbourne you can see, in your classroom you can see, in your home you can see. He's just teaching, 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 teaching. Welcome. Please make yourselves comfortable. Hare Krishna. So Krishna is always trying to break through the barrier of ignorance and draw us closer to him in love. But we really don't quite know how to process what he's doing. So this particular occasion, I was feeling, as I was staying in Puri, and I was feeling the loss of a very dear friend. And it was somewhat painful. There was some sadness in the heart. I wouldn't say there was a deep sadness, but there was some sadness. And we were walking along the street to the temple, and we would go through some side streets, this way, this way, this way, to get to the temple. And along of these side streets, because they were where people reside, or the residences of people of Puri, there was this gutter system. Like here we have gutters, and a little bit of water runs down the gutter, and it goes down the drain, and it disappears. But there they have very deep, like a trench dug out like this, because, and it goes along the side of the houses. And in the rainy season, with all the rain and so forth, this will fill right up. So they need to have it very deep. But we were there in the summer, and so of course there was practically no water in this, and you had to watch out you didn't slip or fall in them because they were quite strong. A big size. So we were walking along, and I was in my own world. And all of a sudden, just as sometimes you notice something, I noticed that, the gutters are all flooded. The water is pouring out on the street, and this is dirty water. So immediately my intelligence said, watch out, there's water on the ground, it's dirty water. So I started walking around like this because I was barefooted. And then another part of my intelligence said to me, how come these gutters are flooded? It's the middle of summer. There's no rain, there hasn't been rain last night, there hasn't been rain for days. How did the gutters become flooded? And it just caught my attention. Now that's how Krishna acts. He just prompts a question. How come this? Instead of just walking along mindlessly, something happens and you look at it. So I looked at this flooding of water and it intrigued me because there was no water to flood. So I kept walking, avoiding the flooding water, until I came to a point where I saw that there was a man who was cleaning these gutters. And so what he had done was he had put a piece of board, wood, the same size as the gutter, into the gutter at a particular point. So the water's going like this, and he's cleaning this section. So as everybody's water from the houses is going into the gutter, it can't go past this point because there's a block. And on the other side of the gutter, the water was just running little as usual. And I thought to myself, there's a message in this, there's a message in this. And as I was walking, I was trying to think, what is the message? What is the message? What is Krishna trying to tell me? And it was a day or so later that I understood what the message was. And I remember it so clearly to this day. I understood for myself, the message for me was, you see, you have only a little bit of love. Just a wee bit of love, and it just trickles down the drain. Because it's the summer of your life, so you're not very nourished, so your little water is there. But when I put a block, I stop something that you want, somebody that you want to be with, some relationship. If we hear of somebody whose child dies or some very difficult block, impediment comes, then what happens is that little bit of love, it starts to bank up. And instead of only being this big, as it would be as it flowed on, it starts getting this big upon this big upon this big upon this big because it can't get out, it's blocked. And all of a sudden, there's so much water. And Krishna says, if I just took that block away, it would be again shallow. But I want to give you a taste of what it would be like to have deep love. So I've put a block in your way, and now you're feeling a build-up of feeling. But understand, it's not that your love has increased, but it's been blocked, and therefore it's multiplied in this particular way. So try to understand from this what it would be like if you had deep love. Because for a moment, you're getting a little taste. So this is how Krishna acts, because Krishna, he wants us all to love him. This is the theme of this verse. I am the most dear to the soul. Now if we could tattoo that on our brain. I am the most dear to the soul. I am the most dear to the soul, so that every moment we could see that on the inside of our brain. I am the most dear to the soul. Then our Krishna consciousness would really take off. But the problem is because we're a little bit selfish still, because we're not fully purified yet. Sometimes I would think, oh, I'm the most dear to the soul. That means he's the most dear to me. I'm a soul, he's dear to me. And then I would think, oh, so that's good, I'm okay. But I forget that he's saying, I'm most dear to the soul means he's most dear to everyone. And he wants me to help everyone. Not only that he should help me, and now I'll be happy, no more problems in my life. But he wants me to give this information to everyone. Because I, says he, am most dear to the soul, not the one singular soul, but all the souls. So as our Leela is progressing here, the cowherd boys were playing in such a wonderful, happy way with Krishna. and Krishna was tricking them, because Krishna is very tricky. And sometimes we have to be particularly alert to see what he is doing. It demands development of relationship. If you know a person very well, then you know their nature, you know why they do things, you know if they're very funny or they're very clever or whatever they do, because you have a relationship with them. So Krishna consciousness means to develop my relationship with Krishna. And in that relationship there's so much sweetness. So Krishna tricked the boys, he took them in a different way where there was nothing to eat. They had a drink of water, they all swam in the Jamuna, they were so happy, but then they said, we're hungry, and they thought, he's hungry. So they said, please tell us where we can get something to eat. And he told them, there's some very nice brahmanas not too far from here. Go there, they're very generous and magnanimous, like trees, they will feed you. So the boys went very enthusiastically, they met the brahmanas, and the brahmanas were very cold-hearted. They had their mind on what they were doing. And they were offering things, they were offering these big yajñas. It was very impressive. But their goal was for their own elevation. Their goal was not bhakti. So when these little boys, who were so simple and full of love for Krishna and Balaram, came walking into their midst, they took one little peep out of the corner of their eye and they decided to themselves they wouldn't waste their valuable time talking to these children. And so they continued with, and they thought to themselves, we will tolerate them. Because they're children, you can't be angry at children, so we'll be very tolerant of them. But in their minds they were a wee bit annoyed, because the boys were very kind of self-confident. And they were saying to the brahmanas, you know, you must know Krishna and Balaram because you are like earthly gods. And you should, you, of course you know that Krishna is the Supreme Lord and he's nearby. Now when they would say Krishna is God, it didn't mean anything to them. It wasn't like they got all reverential and they just thought, okay, he's God, yes he's God, he's this, he's that, but he's our friend. So they kept their minds fully absorbed in their friendship, and they were trying to educate the brahmanas to give them something to take back to Krishna. That was their interest. And they didn't do it. And they ignored them. And the boys got very upset and with very sad faces, because little children get very upset easily. They turned around and went back to Krishna, and they gently but lovingly, because that was their relationship. They said to Krishna, you cheated us. You told us that these brahmanas would feed us, and they didn't. They were so hard-hearted. And Krishna said to them, I thought that they were like trees. They would feed you and take care of you. But anyway, never mind. So then he told the boys, go back again. They're like, go back again? And he said, yes, go back again, and this time you go and visit the wives of these brahmanas. And he started to describe these ladies. He said, these ladies are so exceptional, because from their very childhood, from their very youth, before they were married, they've been hearing about me. He told them, you know, they only eat every 3 days. Because they have so much separation from me. They're always thinking of me. They're meditating on me day and night, meditating on me. And he told them a little more about these ladies. He said, they consider their love for me to be their only wealth. And they eat only every 3 days. And the boy said, really? And Krishna said, yes. And then he said, they feel that their food is hearing my name. And the boy said, oh, they were very excited. And he said to them, he told them, when you go there, don't go where all the yajna and all the festival is going on, where the fire sacrifices and the fires are burning and all the people are there. Go round the back into their private quarters, and then you go and meet them, and you tell them that Krishna and Balaram are nearby and they've sent you. So this time the boys were really excited, and they were like little calves. They were jumping for joy. They were so excited. They're going back, and this time they believed fully they were going to be totally successful in their attempt. And so off they went. And when Krishna was talking about those wives, he said something very nice. He said that they have given up sense enjoyment due to separation from me. They look like golden creepers. So creepers, you know, a creeper without a tree is like limp. Can't do anything because it requires a tree to wind around. So they look like golden creepers and they find no happiness. But then he added, he said, somehow or other they remain joyful by the strength of their affection for me. And they behave perfectly. On one hand, he's saying they're so full of separation, they no longer even wish to eat. Have we had such an experience? It's like the water in Puri. What blockage has Krishna ever given to our love so that our love can deepen for only a moment? But these ladies are always like this. He said, they behave perfectly due to their love for me. They know how to act properly in every circumstance. They do not argue with hungry children. They do not ignore hungry children. They tolerate the shouting of their husbands. They are attractive and pure and dedicated. And they are the embodiment of forgiveness. So what wonderful qualities come from loving Krishna. One may not have those qualities personally, but the love that one feels for Krishna enhances and increases these qualities as the love develops. So the boys came. They snuck in the back way. Nobody saw them. They went into the ladies' kitchens, and there they were, and they were all cooking and doing what was necessary for the yajna. They were acting perfectly. But why? Because they're always thinking of Krishna, 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 Krishna. And the boys came up to the ladies, and they bowed down to the ladies. And these little boys, they wear little ankle bells, so they tinkle. And they all tinkling, they bowed down to the ladies, and the ladies were there. And they said, oh dear Brahmanis, we offer our obeisances to you. We are friends of Krishna. Please hear our appeal. And you know, the ladies only heard one word of that. Krishna. Krishna, and they started to hear Krishna, 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 Krishna. They just started hearing the word Krishna. They were shocked when they heard Krishna's name. Because for these ladies, they're Brahmanis. That means they're very high class in the Vedic society. They didn't go out of their houses unless they went in a palanquin and it was covered on all sides. Even the sun could not see the face of these women. They were so cultured, so pious, so strict, and so religious. So how were they, in their strict Vedic position, how were they ever going to see Krishna? They had given up all hope that they would ever see him. And that sounds odd to us, because we just get up and do whatever we feel like. Walk into the temple and out of the temple. We go home when we feel. We come here when we feel. We stand in front of the deities as long as we feel like. We go out again. We get on with our lives. We do everything. But you see, we haven't got any love. That's the problem. So we go on, and who's in the center of our lives? We're in the center of our lives. I this, I that, now this, that. And now we've transformed from non-devotees to devotees, but we're still devotees in the beginning stage. In the beginning stage, we still don't have that love. But these ladies had been hearing about Krishna since their youth, and they knew, I'll never get to see him. But they heard, and they heard with the ears active, as we were talking about yesterday, active hearing and passive hearing. Active hearing is when you really want something. And passive hearing is when you're doing it because it's one of the rituals or routines or habits or practices of your scheduled daily life. So we don't want to become regulated routine devotees. We want to become devotees who have life. I want to develop myself in terms of my love for Krishna. Not just going through the process, yes, I've done this today, do it tomorrow, next day, next day. We will be like that for some time, but that's not our goal. And that's not our, should not be our emphasis. So they were listening to the name Krishna and thinking, what is in this mantra? And they had, the boys then saw that the ladies were going a little bit funny. So they said very quickly, we have come here on the order of Krishna. Krishna and Balaram are nearby, and they've sent us here to get some, beg some food from you. And the ladies, they were all cooking when they came in. But as soon as they heard Krishna's name, and they heard that Krishna and Balaram were nearby, they started to shake, and they started to tremble, and they started to go into... Keep it to yourself and ask me later. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. So then these ladies, they had this inner experience that they were having. And inside their hearts they were thinking and hearing Krishna's name. They were feeling so moved. And tears started rolling down their faces. Tears and tears, because it was Krishna has sent these boys. They saw that Krishna had sent these boys. And they were so full of love that they were stunned. And the boys were looking at them and thinking, uh-oh, they're ignoring us as well. They're not talking to us either. You know, we're saying, we need something to eat for Krishna, and they're just standing there and crying. They have gone into such a state of consciousness. What will we do now? So they're starting to get a little bit worried. But these ladies, because they were overwhelmed by love and not by impatience, they started to walk as if in a trance towards the stoves and the rest of the parts of the kitchen. And they began, some of the ladies began to cook and cook and cook more food for Krishna and Balaram. And other ladies who didn't really quite know what to do, because they were a little bit still in a trance-like state, they just started taking all the food from all the yajna and everything. They were putting it into golden pots, and they were placing crystal lids on the top, and they took all the food. Now there was so much food. So these ladies were carrying on their heads these huge glass pots with crystal lids with white silk over the top, and they were carrying in their arms plates full of food they were cooking. They were taking every single thing. And then the boys started to walk out the front, out the door. They didn't go out the back way, they went out the front way. And they walked right through the yajna. And the ladies walked right through with all their plates and all their pots. They didn't see anyone. They just didn't see or pay attention to anyone. They were going to Krishna. And the boys were walking in the front with their sticks, very proud of themselves. And the ladies were walking behind, and the husbands and their fathers and their sons and their children came jumping out to say, wait, where are you going? They're taking everything. Where are you going? And the ladies didn't actually hear them. They were so set on seeing Krishna. So they kept walking, and they're walking and walking, following the footsteps of the boys. They hardly speak to each other because they're so deeply absorbed. And occasionally they look with each other, at each other, and they direct questions to each other through their eyes. And they're walking, walking, and these pots are so heavy. They're actually suffering so much. They're walking, sometimes they're walking fast. Sometimes they slow down because of their ecstatic mood. They're thinking of Krishna, they slow down. Then they're moving again very quickly, and the boys are watching behind to see that the ladies are coming. They're so proud of themselves. All the food is now coming to feed everyone. And the ladies, sometimes they would say, how much further? But they weren't saying how much further? They were saying, how much further? And they didn't even feel the weight on their head. Because they were so focused, and this is what we need and we don't have. And this is the difficulty, why we struggle so much, because we go this way and that way, because we're not so focused. And then we question this, and what about that, and should it be this, and shouldn't it be that? And in the middle of that, although we sincerely want to serve Krishna, there's no criticism meant there, but still, because we're in the beginning stage, there's a lot of I in it. I need this, what about this, and mine. But as we advance in Krishna consciousness, that becomes lessened. And it's not because we're becoming more and more callous. It's because our love for Krishna is increasing. And now we have something to give other people. Just as these ladies were bringing all their food, not only to feed Krishna, they were coming to see Krishna, but they had food for all the boys as well. So they were walking and walking and walking, and eventually, after some time, they came to where Krishna was. Now this is so beautifully described in the writings of Goswamis that it's just like reading nectar. You can read something you can taste. Because Krishna was in that Ashok grove with the other boys, waiting for them. He knew they were coming. He had staged everything, even to make the boys hungry, just to bring these ladies to him. Mm-hmm. Because he knew the depth of their love. And he knew the impossibility of them ever being able to leave, otherwise their families. And so he was standing there. He had his arm on the shoulder of Subal. Subal is one of his favorite friends. Subal is so handsome and beautiful that Subal can go into the house of Srimati Radharani herself and dress in ladies' clothes, and people think it's Srimati Radharani. And then Srimati Radharani can dress in Subal's clothes and go out of the house and meet Krishna. So Subal is so close to Krishna, and Krishna has his arm on his shoulder. Do you know what else he was doing? He had what's called in the Sanskrit language a toy lotus. A toy lotus means like a very, very petite lotus. And Krishna likes these. He puts them over his ear and he plays with them sometimes. So Krishna was standing there. He had this toy baby lotus in his hand, delicate lotus, and he was swirling it. So he was going round and round and round and round his hand. He was just gently swirling it around and swirling it around. And as the ladies came closer and they saw him, he was like unlimited beauty. The only thing, and there's nothing that can describe Krishna. It was like if you see sometimes at sunset, the pinkish sky and the light is coming through monsoon clouds, rain clouds. The two together, the dark and the pink and the aura and the translucent. This is one of these analogies that's given to give us some idea. So he was so beautiful, his eyes were so beautiful, his cloth was golden, radiating. And he had a beautiful smile on his face and a garland that went right down to his knees. And he was surrounded by his friends and he was swirling this lotus. And And do you know what he was telling them when he was swirling the lotus? He was telling those ladies, welcome. Now you are seeing me. It is swirling your heart round and round and round. To see my beauty is swirling your heart. And the ladies were swirling because Krishna was so beautiful. And he was also saying something else, because Krishna never just says one thing. He was saying, you see the swirling of this lotus? My heart is swirling to see you. So the ladies became again stunned. And in their inner mind, they took Krishna through their eyes and they brought him inside of their heart. And each one of them felt they were with Krishna directly alone. And then when they would open their eyes, they would see he was in front of them. When they closed their eyes, he was with them. When they opened their eyes, he was in front of them. And they thought to themselves, for so long we have been meditating on Krishna, and now the subject of our meditation is standing right before us. And they just stood there stunned. And Krishna looked at them. And Srila Jiva Goswami describes that generally when somebody comes to see you, you say to them, welcome, please come in, right? You say, please come in, please come inside. And then after they come inside, you say, how can I help you? Please sit down. So first you welcome them, and then you sit them down. But Krishna, because the ladies were so overwhelmed, he just said to them, sit down. He just ignored all of the other etiquettes of welcoming a guest. He said, please sit down. And the ladies just stood there. And he personally went and lifted the pots off their heads and took the pots and placed them on the ground. And then he asked them, did you have any difficulty getting here? He said, I see you are all here. I'm so happy to welcome you. And he glorified their love for him. Now please listen to what he said, which is an extension of this particular verse. Because here is the verse, but this is what Śrīla Jīva Gosvāmī explains that Krishna meant. He said, you're coming here neglecting all the restrictions of relatives and fathers and brothers and husbands is completely befitting. Because you are wise, you have fallen in love with me. Wise people who love me are able to see me directly. What more can I say about wise souls? Then Krishna told them, I see that all love, to whomever it is directed, all people's love to whoever it is directed is merely a partial and perverted manifestation of what was originally love for me. I'll read that again. I see that all love to whoever it is directed is merely a partial and perverted manifestation of what was originally love for me. When a soul reposes his love in me, then that love is true, true love, a love that becomes limitless by nature. When a person reposes his love in someone other than me, then that love is not true love. It is a false love, a love with boundaries, which is limited and conditional. I see that everywhere in this world that unlimited love arises from a small portion of love for me. Any love that you see that is deep is arising from a small portion of love for me. People who do not see me everywhere, who do not see me everywhere and in every situation, remain always unfulfilled. You are not like that. You see that in every situation, I am by your side. So this is what Krishna told the ladies. And the ladies were so moved by what Krishna was saying. He welcomed them, he glorified them, he spoke of the glory of their love. They were so happy. This was what they had always dreamed of. And when they left their houses, they had no intention of ever going back. Because now they were on a true path, and they were going. And then Krishna said to them, after welcoming them, taking the pots off their head, making them comfortable, speaking so many sweet words, he said to them, "Now, you should quickly return, and you should go back to your husbands and children. That activity will please me." And the ladies were shocked. They were so heartbroken. To them it was like Krishna had delivered such sweet words to them, like the sweetest of sweet things, and now he was feeding them poison. And they became very bold to speak their minds. They said, "You are learned in ethics and morality," talking to Krishna, "but now without any fear," because their love had removed all boundaries. So they said, "You are learned in ethics and morality, but your words are devoid of love. Until now, we have survived by hearing your name and hearing about your sweetness. But where is your sweetness now? Although you are very proud, please listen to us. Your promise is to never reject anyone who wants to serve you. And we have given up the dark cave that is household life. Please accept us. Our relatives will no longer take us back. They will reject us and laugh at us. People will criticize us. But still we are here. We have offered our lives and our bodies at your lotus feet. So please show us some compassion. Please take control of the chariots of our minds. Take control of our minds. And grant our desire. We hold flowers on our head that you have stepped upon. We hold those flowers on our heads. Please don't ask us to go home now." So Krishna heard their prayers. He listened to their prayers. And they were crying and crying by this time. And he said to them, "Listen very attentively. Such stubbornness does not befit you. You should understand that one who hears about me and chants my name and chants about my glories and meditates on my form can easily bring me under their control. This does not require physical proximity to me. If you think of me within your minds, I will also think of you, and I will embrace you there. Please go home, but do not worry. No one will be angry with you. Your family are dear to you because I am residing within them. Your family are dear to you because I am residing within them in my form as a super soul. Please go home." Now, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives us a very interesting illumination on this, because when I first was reading and preparing this, I felt so sorry for those ladies, and because I'm not very advanced, when I feel sorry for them, I'm kind of feeling sorry for myself. I'm thinking, wow, I might try to go to Krishna and give up everything and he'll say, go home. And so, oh, that would be really scary. So I tried to go a bit deeper than that, to try to understand what was taking place here. So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that when they came to Krishna with their pure love, it was pure love, they didn't want to go back, they wanted to be with him, he instantly wanted to accept them. He accepted their love and he accepted them. But something very subtle happened at the same time. Because Krishna has many energies and potencies, because he's the supreme master of everything. So Krishna's Lila Shakti, which is his energy that provides all the ingredients for his pastimes, his Lila Shakti understood that this Lila, if Krishna is the wives of Brahmin ladies, become either Krishna's consorts, or they say, we don't want to be your consorts, the gopis belong to you, we'll just stay here in the forest and live in the forest. We won't go home, we'll just live in the forest like beggar ladies. So if anyone heard this story, they would think, oh, this is not very nice, why would Krishna do that? They're Brahmin ladies, they're in society. And so Krishna's Lila Shakti provided a sense of Aishwarya in Krishna that is not normally there, wherein he spoke like as if I am the Supreme Lord. So his instructions here are like Bhagavad Gita instructions, hearing about me, chanting about me, you will come close to me. They are Vedic instructions, instructions on how to develop your love for Krishna. So Krishna doesn't normally speak like that in Vrindavan. Everything is above that level. So why did he speak like that? Because he wanted to benedict the ladies in a different way, to keep the sanctity of the pastime so people would not become confused, and simultaneously to give the ladies what they really, really desired. So basically what he was telling them was, your process of meditation that you've been doing for so many years has now fructified. You're seeing me. But you should go home and continue with that process of meditation. It's the best thing for you. And in that process of meditation, now, if you meditate on me, you will see me directly before you. So the ladies had to think a bit. And naturally, they didn't want to go. But at the same time, they understood that Krishna was saying, I will go with you, I will be there with you. And so they turned around very quickly and they left. And they returned to their place. And when they got back, their husbands were so amazed at what their wives had done. Ignored everything and just gone to Krishna and Balaram. And it created in them, they were so ashamed at what they hadn't done. They saw the contrast with their wives. And from that time on, their wives, they no longer really had any identification as wives. They had lost that with Krishna. They no longer felt like they were married to the Brahmanas. That means they didn't say that they just ignored everybody, but they did everything, all their duties, but they had no attachment whatsoever to what they were doing. And the Brahmanas just respected their wives like their gurus. The wives didn't speak very much because they were always practicing their meditation. And the Brahmanas served their wives. And in this way, they were also to become purified. So Krishna, he knew exactly what was best because he's within everyone's heart. And he had assured those ladies, if you love me, everything else will be taken care of. Be sure of that. So they had gone home. and the Brahmins were amazed. And the ladies continued, but there was one lady who didn't get to come because her husband or her family members prevented her from leaving the house. And so in all the commentaries by all our Goswamis who explain this pastime, they hint that this lady was the most fortunate. So isn't this interesting? She was the one that didn't get to come. She was like the barrier was put up, right, for the water. Barrier went down, boom, and she couldn't go, and everyone else went, and she couldn't go. And her anxiety because she couldn't go was so intense that she just meditated and meditated and meditated on Krishna, and she became released from her material body completely. She instantaneously received a spiritual body. And in that spiritual body, she immediately went to Krishna, to join in Krishna's pastimes. So when the other ladies came back, they thought that she was the most fortunate. But they were also, of course, so fortunate. So they came back. And Krishna himself served all the cowherd boys. He served all the cowherd boys their lunch, and there were so many boys, unlimited boys, and there wasn't unlimited food, but it expanded into enough for everyone. And then after everyone was happy and Krishna had fed them all, he ate a little bit. And when asked, why did he just eat a little bit? Why did he serve them and eat a little bit? There's a wonderful answer given. And that was that in some part of Krishna's unlimited heart, he was feeling morose because he had to send them back. So he wasn't hungry. He just took a little bit. So the boys sat there and they ate and laughed and did everything that young boys do. And then they tell so many jokes. Madhu Mangal is Krishna's Brahmin friend. And he loves to eat. He's a little fatty. And he's so humorous. He makes all the jokes to keep everything light. So he was telling the other boys, this food is so good. We should commission those ladies and they can come and live somewhere in the forest near us. They can make a hut for them so they can come every day and feed them. And you can eat and the first person who'll taste after you is me. And the boys all laughed at him and said, you're so greedy. And he said, why are you greedy? See, they're greedy. They're just greedy to get the food from the Brahmin ladies and everything. And the boys looked at him and said, you're a Brahmin. We know all about Brahmins. They just want to eat. So they laughed and joked in this wonderful, playful way without any etiquette or fear or anything that we have to observe here in this world to do the right and wrong thing. Because there's no right and wrong for them. There's only love. Pure love. Selfless love for Krishna. And then the boys all came together and they headed home and they played their flutes. Krishna called all the cows and they all went home. And when they got home, all the residents of Vrindavan were waiting for Krishna because every atomic particle of Vrindavan is just giving love to Krishna, loving Krishna, absorbed in love for Krishna. His mother, his father, his friends, the gopis, the cows, the grass, the trees, the air, the water in the Yamuna, the food, everything is full of love. So Krishna came home, and it's noted that nobody spoke about this incident to their families. And someone asked me, why didn't they tell their mothers and fathers? And I was thinking about it and I said, because it was a little bit special and they didn't want to, it was a little bit private that all those ladies came like that and that they fed them instead of their mother and father. And their mother and father said, you ate already? You didn't eat my lunch? So they'd be very worried that Krishna had been hungry and hadn't eaten, or he'd eaten somewhere else and maybe they should have fed him. So they just didn't speak about this. And one of our acharyas, I think it's Srila Jiva Goswami, describes something quite amazing that I've only read in brief. But he explains that when the Brahmins came home, So as the Brahman ladies were leaving, they repeatedly looked back and Krishna blessed them, so they saw his form everywhere. After a long time, they returned home, and there they saw that both their pots and their houses were now made of jewels. The Brahmanas were amazed, because the houses had turned into jeweled houses. And they remembered how Krishna, as a baby, had filled up the fruit lady's basket with jewels. And seeing this, you see, because they were less advanced, they had to see a miracle. And then they would, oh! So seeing this, the Brahmanas adopted the same mood of devotion as their wives. And as I was saying, one saintly wife offered food directly to the Lord. Our saintly wives, I beg your pardon, offered food directly to the Lord. They are most fortunate, and we are fallen and lowly. A person who does not serve Krishna should not continue to remain alive. But yet, because they are in the employment of Kamsa, those Brahmins, their hearts changed, longing to see Krishna, did not go to see him. But the one Brahmin wife who was prevented from going at once left her body, now freed from birth and death. She attained entrance into the spiritual world to serve Krishna there directly. So, thank you very much for your patient and very attentive hearing of this pastime, and I hope that in some way it may inspire you in your own advancement in devotional service and help you to target the real aim, goal and purpose of what Srila Prabhupada has come here to Melbourne and so many places has come to give. We all have our day-by-day routines and they fill most of our attention. But if we understand what the goal and purpose of them is, it's much, much easier to do them in a happy way. So thank you. Hare Krishna. If there are any questions, one gentleman and his question have left. You've all heard. If there are any more, you can please ask now. Anything you didn't understand? Yes. They experience different things. Just like, say, two friends have a different kind of relationship, say, than a mother and son. Like if you're in the room and your mother comes in and you're sitting with your friend talking, your friend has one relationship with you and sees you in a particular way and experiences something, and your mother experiences something different. And generally a mother will see, oh, he's so little, he's so hungry, he needs something to eat. Because a mother's love is like that. She sees through her love. And then if you were married and you have a wife, or if you have babies, they see you differently as well. So they may all be in the same place together, but their looking is different according to their relationship. So the boys just looked on and they accept whatever Krishna wants, whatever he likes. It's good. But they didn't experience those kind of emotions because that's not the nature of their love. But their love is as complete or more complete, but it has a different quality or mood. Do you have a question? You've got a hand that seems to be... Yes, I have a problem.
Thank you very much for such a wonderful pastime. So interesting. I'm wondering, is it a similar thing Lord Krishna told the gopi, and the gopi came because he was telling them go back.
Yes, yes. Yes, it's identical. He gave an identical instruction to the Brahmin ladies as he gave to the gopis. The gopis didn't go back, they refused to leave, and the Brahmin ladies went. And I was thinking about that a lot did the Brahmin ladies do the wrong thing? Should they have stood firm and said, no, we won't go back, we don't care? They did stand firm. They didn't just turn around and go back without an argument. And they did say that we've given up those designations now, so you can't hold them against us. But Krishna said to them that this would be better for you. This is a better process for you. So they trusted that. And there's a nice comment by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who says that the gopis stayed and the ladies left, and they both attained the same goal. Ultimately, they both attained the same thing. So sometimes when I would read this pastime over many years in different circumstances, I would think how unlucky these ladies were. I hope I don't become on this go away group. But so it was very illuminating for me to read about the quality of Krishna's reciprocation with them when they went home, and their state of mind when they went home, which was very exalted and very wonderful. So they were not rejected, and they didn't do the wrong thing by leaving. And yes, he said the same thing to them both. Hare Krishna. Yes. We can't compare our level here of consciousness in any way with somebody who is actually willing to give up everything that they have without any reservation, like Krishna said. Your love, your family members, they're conditional and partial, and it is not real love. So of course that kind of love can have many faults. There may be a sense of love, this is my family member, this is this, but then it doesn't reveal all the characteristics of love. And we can't think of ourselves in comparison to the Brahmin ladies that, oh, I've given up everything for Krishna consciousness, because if we take a careful look, we'll see that we haven't yet been able to give up everything for Krishna. We're getting much more than we've given. So we're not yet in a stage where we're actually giving a lot, even though we may think, oh yes, I gave up a career. Big deal. You've had so many headaches in your career. Oh, I gave up getting married, I don't have a family. Oh, that's wonderful, but families are tedious. And maybe you thought that too, and so you gave it up. You see, so we haven't yet come to that point of pure love. So here in the material world, how can we understand this pastime as relevant to us? We can make our attempt to give something to Krishna, knowing as we do that it's not perfect, but this is the best I can do, and I'm going to do the best I can do. And then if our family members don't change their attitude towards us, maybe Krishna doesn't want them to. Or maybe they don't want to, and Krishna is satisfying their desire at this time. Maybe later it will happen, but that has to be secondary to our act of giving. Otherwise, there's a little risk that we'll start saying, on the table up here I'm giving you this, and under the table put this quickly. So this is the material world. That's what everyone does in the material world. So we, in the beginning, we're still doing that because we're habituated to that. And Krishna is, so therefore Krishna doesn't put it in your hand. Otherwise it will confirm that, I do the same thing in the spiritual world. No, opposite. So in the beginning it looks like confusing, but gradually things clarify.
Thank you.
and be what they are, and we accept them as Krishna's mercy. Is that okay? All right. Yes.
Yesterday and today, talking about the passive and active. How do you migrate from passive to active?
That's a really good question. Thank you for asking such a really good question. Everyone, I think, heard. How do you change from being a passive hearer, a passive devotee, to an active devotee? That would be a really nice thing to talk together in a group about, to hear what other people do. But now is unfortunately not the right time to do that. But just a few things that I notice is that the first thing is you have to become mindful, or we call it conscious. Prabhupada always linked Krishna conscious. Krishna, you have become Krishna conscious, because Krishna is the source of conscious. Like he said, you don't say shine. Oh, it's so nice outside in the shine. You say sunshine, because the sun is shining, comes from the sun. So we say Krishna consciousness, but we have to become conscious. That means we have to be willing to look at ourselves and see what we're doing or what we're not doing. That takes a bit of time, because in the beginning it's too hard to do everything at once. But then gradually, as we do that, we begin to become a little bit observant. And we also have to have a little bit of memory, if we can. You know, on the computer, it has to have a certain amount of memory if it's going to work right. So we need a certain amount of storage space, too, for our experiences, so that we remember them and we see, oh, that was interesting. When I did that, I felt like that. And I did that, and that was terrible. Horrible things happened after I did that. And we need to learn how to remember. So we need to remember. We need to be a little mindful of ourselves. Who am I? What am I doing? What am I thinking right now? These are really good tools. Just as any man, if a man is going to build a Rath Yatra cart, he may have simple tools, not complicated tools, but he needs tools. So as a devotee, we need these tools. So practicing our Krishna consciousness, trying to be conscious, trying to remember what I did, what I was told, trying to do this. That effort to do that, that would be the best thing to make you become active. That effort, because you're putting in effort now, and Krishna sees this, oh look, he's working so hard. It's very nice. So then he reciprocates, and as he reciprocates, you try a bit more, and but we need also, of course, guidance. We need older devotees, we need people to help us, people to give us feedback on how we're doing. We always need those things too. We don't become a self-made individual. We're working as a group, but we have to have it that it comes from Krishna. Really, it's Krishna. And everything around me is also, as Krishna said, if you don't see me by your side, you'll be unfulfilled. So we need that, we need it, we need it. So here they are, we need to go and pray to the deities. I don't have that. Please can you help me with this? Please can you help me with this is a very good prayer. But when we pray, like, my relatives aren't happy with me, please could you help me with this? That's a complicated prayer. Because that's, you're praying, you want to impose your idea of what they should be doing over the top of their idea. So it's complicated, and Krishna will maybe fulfill it, but it may take time. But when we're praying for our own advancement, Krishna is quite eager to reciprocate with us. Thank you. Very good questions. Thank you. All right. I think it's time for everyone to start a late morning again. Thank you for your patience. Hare Krishna.